good morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. This coming Sunday, May 18th, hundreds will participate in Albuquerque in the 5th annual Safari Run and Race with Kenyans for Global Health to raise funds for Global Health Partnerships. Global Health Partnerships is an Albuquerque-based nonprofit organization of medical professionals and other volunteers who currently work in Kenya as partners with local community organizations and healthcare providers to improve the health and well-being of the poor and marginalized, with an emphasis on improving the health and survival of young children. Joining me in studio today to discuss Global Health Partnerships and its work are Dr. Angela Tomedi, part-time faculty in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of New Mexico and the founder of Global Health Partnerships, Dr. Ruth O'Keefe, retired orthopedic surgeon and vice president of the Board of Global Health Partnerships, or GHP, and Mbarak Hussein, native Kenyan and world-class runner, now on the GHP board, who helps organize the Safari Run. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Tomedi, let's begin with you. I bet I'm not the first to tell you how moved I was in looking at and reading information on the Global Health Partnerships website, moved by the circumstances the people in Kenya must overcome, and moved by the work of your organization. So tell us, please, Dr. Tomedi, how did you come to found Global Health Partnerships and begin to undertake the vital work performed by your organization?
Well, prior to founding Global Health Partnerships in 2006, I had worked for more than 20 years in Latin America in some countries on global health issues, especially revolving around child health. I met a very interesting person who was raising funds by craft sales. I used to be the president of Peacecraft, a local nonprofit organization, and learned about a women's group who was making baskets, to raise funds to build a clinic to provide health care that wasn't available in their communities in a rural part of Kenya. So they raised enough funds to construct this building, but couldn't quite get it finished. Over at least 8 years, they were working on this. So I learned about this through a craft organization and was fascinated by the idea. Again, the self-help idea of a community getting together to bring health care to their community, and particularly to improve the health of young children and women. So I went on my first trip in 2006 to meet them, learn about them, to see if we could do something to assist them in their efforts. It was fascinating. They were working very hard at this. It looked like a great opportunity because the Ministry of Health said that if they could get this clinic completed, the Ministry of Health would then provide the professional staff, the nurses, some medicine supplies for the clinic, and it would then be a sustainable operation. So we raised the initial funds, were able to get this clinic completed in the village of Kisiseni, and then went on to work with community groups to do training of community health workers so that more health care develops at the village level, which is what I'd been involved with in Latin America.
Now, when one looks at a map of Kenya, where is this village of Kisiseni?
It's in the southeastern part of Kenya. It's in a southeast of the city of Nairobi, going towards Somalia and the coast.
Okay. And Dr. Ruth O'Keefe, you're a retired orthopedic surgeon. And how did you get involved with Global Health Partnerships?
Oh, I was dragged into this by one of my favorite medical students.
And have you been to the village?
I've been lucky enough to have been there twice, 2008 and 2011.
And give us a sense of the circumstances that must be overcome by the people in the village and nearby. What is life like in and around the village?
The most profound thing is there's no source of clean water. It's just incredible how hampering that is. Therefore, it's very difficult to grow crops. It certainly complicates health care in many ways. Think about delivering health care in a big clinic with no water and no electricity, or a dental clinic with no water and no electricity. But they're so brave and so hardworking. That's what they do.
Well, and I think I read on the website that there have been some projects undertaken by Global Health Partnerships to help build a dam and help drill for water. But I also read that people will dig down 8 to 10 feet to find water in a riverbed. Is that something you've seen happen when you've been there?
Well, and that's a child-driven activity. As soon as children can walk, they become responsible for gathering water for the family. It takes up to 2 hours each way to get to that 10-foot hole in the lowest part of the river, the dry river. That could be up to 4 hours before school and after school every day.
Is it a drought-stricken area?
Yes.
And hard to grow crops and...
Impossible.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And Mbarak Hussein, you are a native Kenyan. Did you have any connection with the village of how do I pronounce it?
Kisesini.
Kisesini. Yes. Did you have any connection with that village prior to, you know, when you were living in Kenya?
I didn't have any connection, but I know the geography and I know this whole, you know, the topography of the country. So and I never heard of Kisesini until I met Global Health. But I can relate because it's the same problems happen almost several parts of the country.
Did you grow up in a city in Kenya or out in the rural?
I grew up outside the city in a small farming community.
And so how did you come to be involved with Global Health Partnerships?
As Arana, you know, Albuquerque is very famous for, you know, it's been hosting a lot of international runners and mainly Kenyan runners. And I think the word had gone out, and one of the Global Health member came and approached us. We had a small group of runners. So she told us about the organization, and, you know, right away we were thrilled because we relate to the problems that Global Health are trying to address. So it was an easy connection, and ever since we have been involved for the last 5 years.
Now, Sunday's run, the safari run, does a person need to be a world-class runner to participate?
Absolutely not.
But does if a person wants to get there and run with you in stride, they certainly can they not?
Yes, it is. This is an opportunity to come and race one of the fast guys you see around town.
If not for 30 seconds or so. Yeah. So what are the options one can partake in on Sunday in terms of the types of runs or races?
Yeah, we have three different categories of runs. We have an 8K competitive run where people, it's a time race. So they run against time or trying to beat somebody. And then there's a 5K fun run, walk run. So you can run, you can walk. This is the fun. And then we have a little kids K, which is a little bit less than a mile for those little kids, which in my opinion, that's the most interesting race. And now, they get to run with the elite runners.
So lovely opportunity for them. Now, I've run 5Ks and 10Ks, but I hadn't even been familiar with an 8K, so I had to Google it, and it's just about 5 miles, is it not?
Yeah, it's a unique, you know, we put an 8K, you know, in town we have 5Ks, we have 10Ks, half marathon, which is the standard distances. So we thought of doing something, you know, it's not quite a 5K, it's not quite a 10K, which is 3 miles or a 6 miles. So it's a 5 mile run.
Now, can people still register for the run?
Yes, the registration is open until an hour before the race, which is, it's open until 7 o'clock on Sunday. And we have normally there's a late registration fee, but we don't hike up the price. So the price is still the same, $25. And the registration, the packet pickup is going to be on Saturday at Heart and Soul sporting goods store. So anybody who is the last minute, you know, Albuquerque is, we tend to register last minute. So we'll be open from 10 to 4 on Saturday and then very early morning Sunday till 8.
Now, we have links to the Global Health Partnership website and I believe to the registration page. But just for people's information, it's ghp-usa.org.
Absolutely. Yep.
And then people can go ahead and find the website. Dr. Tomedi, Dr. O'Keefe, Ruth, Angelo, are either of you participating this Sunday?
I'll be there as a volunteer with a table to give information. And
I'm going to be the official photographer, and my whole family will be participating.
Excellent, excellent. We're talking today about global health partnerships and its work in Kenya with and for the benefit of Kenyans. If you would like to join in our discussion, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Callin Show webpage at kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866, that's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Let's go ahead and bring in our first caller. It's Glenn from MS Springs. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, and greetings to Dr. Tomedi, who I've known for some time, and for all of his work at Peacecraft. There is a medical and dental clinic in Juarez, just across from El Paso, that is probably not a whole lot different than the clinic in Kenya. And I was able to visit that and take some donations. I think it's so important for us who have everything we want on this side of the border to become aware of the needs in the rest of the world. And I guess I would invite people to maybe contact Annunciation House and Ruben Garcia in El Paso if anyone wants to visit this clinic in Juarez and be sensitized and understand personally what your guests are speaking about. And I thank them all and thank all of the runners for participating in what you all are doing. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call this morning, Glenn. Obviously, there's no shortage of places or projects to get involved in, but, you know, one of the things that I was reading about on the website was the sense of learning things in Kenya through the projects there and then bringing them back and applying them even in places like New Mexico, rural New Mexico. So let's talk a little bit about Global Health Partnerships collaboration with the University of New Mexico. And Dr. Tomedi, tell us about that, please.
So as part of my work with UNM, I both supervise medical students and residents in their clinical work at the Southeast Heights Clinic and the International Zone. But I also mentor them during their required research projects. To graduate in medical school, a student has to complete a research project and write a paper. Many of the students are interested in international work, fortunately, and they feel they both learn from the cross-cultural experience and can bring back knowledge of the rural healthcare problems there and applicability to rural healthcare problems here. From our standpoint, Global Health Partnerships and UNM both benefit considerably by this. Global Health Partnerships initiates community-based projects to address things like child malnutrition, the high rate of newborn deaths, and other serious health problems that result in death of children, and as well as problems with obstetrical complications. So we, together with students, initiate some projects and then study them carefully to be sure that they're efficacious, to be sure that they're working. So the research they're doing helps start programs like a program to address childhood malnutrition and then studies the outcome to see, is it really working or not?
And some of these students might go ahead and decide to participate down in Juarez, where
yes.
Glenn was just speaking of, or other places in rural
Mexico. That's right, exactly. Many of them do, both internationally, whether it be border health, other projects in Latin America, or other African projects throughout the world, or in parts of New Mexico, especially the rural parts of New Mexico. One of them, for example, one of the MPH, Masters in Public Health students, or two of them, did a project where they looked at a program of agricultural improvement in an arid, semi-arid region on the Navajo Reservation, met with them about the challenges and the projects they have used to improve agriculture, and brought that some of that information to rural Kenya, sharing in that direction what could be done to improve agriculture in an arid, semi-arid area. So there is this collaboration exactly that works quite well.
And we're talking today about Global Health Partnership, its work in Kenya with and for the benefit of Kenyans. I'm joined by Dr. Angelo Tomede, part-time faculty in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of New Mexico, and the founder of Global Health Partnerships, by Dr. Ruth O'Keefe, retired orthopedic surgeon and vice president of the board of Global Health Partnerships, and Mbarak Hussein, who is now on the GHP board, who helps organize the safari run. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, you may participate in our program by calling in to our local number, 277-5866, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. We'll be back with you in a minute.
Support for KUNM provided by New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, a not-for-profit financial cooperative with member benefits for checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details on member benefits at nmefcu.org. New Mexico Philharmonic is at the Rio Grande Zoo. Saturday night, May 17th, clarinetist Dave Bennett and his stellar sextet team up with the New Mexico Phil for a tribute to jazz giant Benny Goodman. It's Bennett Plays Benny, as close as one will ever get to seeing Benny Goodman live. Bennett Plays Benny will have everyone dancing under the stars. Gates open 6:30, concert at 8. Gourmet food baskets available. Info at nmphil.org. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Philharmonic.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking today about Global Health Partnerships. Their fifth annual safari run is this Sunday, May 18th. You can still register for it. We have links to the website for Global Health Partnerships and to the registration page on our website, but that address is ghp-usa.org, and I encourage you to take a look at that website. Dr. O'Keefe, Ruth O'Keefe, let's spend a little time talking with you, because when you emailed back to me, you told me a little bit about your family and your family's participation in efforts globally to assist people. So go ahead and tell me a little bit about that, please.
Well, I became addicted to doing international medicine and surgery when my oldest was in the Peace Corps, way back in the early 90s. And when a student introduced me to global health, it was right up my alley. It is such a good learning opportunity, a teaching opportunity for our medical students. It expands their ability to think on their feet and use materials at hand for problem solving.
Now, the two times that you've been over to Kenya, have you been over there with medical students while medical students were there?
Yes.
And what's your experience about, or what are your observations about their experience and what they gain?
Well, we do our best to prepare them for what they will see. After all, they have to take all their own housing, for instance. It's tent city accommodations. And we prepare them for limited communications and using their eyes, ears, hands, and brains on the ground for the research that they gather.
Now, what percentage of the medical students at UNM actually travel to the village?
About one-third of the class goes.
And how large is a class?
Just 75.
75. So about 25 each year?
I think the class is up to about 100 now. They expanded it recently. So and we had, let's say, 24 medical students involved this year. This past March, they were there. We have about 18 planned for next March.
And Mbarak Hussein, have you also visited the village when medical students are there as well?
I've never gotten the opportunity to, and that's one of my future goals, is to go and see the work that Global Health is doing back in Kenya.
Have you had a chance to talk to any of the students back here after they've been?
Yes, I have.
And what do they what do they share with you about that experience? Knowing that you are a native Kenyan, what do they share with you?
Yeah, we have the, you know, they have this, they get the opportunity to go there and see, you know, these other things I know offhand. I grew up and I see the almost the same circumstances. So, you know, it's very, to explain it to somebody who hasn't been there sometimes is a little hard. But when somebody has been there and we can really relate and they, you know, we can relate to what they are doing. So I know, you know, what experiences they go through, and I really appreciate a lot the work that they do down there.
You know, and I know when I looked at the website and started reading, I learned some things about Kenya because, you know, for a lot of us, it's one of the countries that we recognize in that part of the world because people travel there for safaris and other reasons. But there's actually quite a bit of inequitable distribution of wealth in that country, is there not?
It is, absolutely. You know, it's very unfortunate. In Kenya, you can find, you know, some of the richest people probably in the world. And then down the line, you can find the poorest of the poor. So there's a big gap between the haves and the have-nots. And sometimes there's neglect. And I think, you know, if that's where, you know, GHP steps in and try to bridge that gap. You know, there's places that really there's deplorable conditions, and some people, you know, living in the city, they don't know what's going on down up in the country.
Is there a sense of charitable giving? Is that part of the ethos in Kenya?
Yes, there is. Yeah, we have, you know, like the lady who started the organization. There's what they call Arambe. Arambe is pulling together, and most people, Arambe is what people do, even raising school fees for kids. You know, they pull together the community, they sell whatever they have to raise funds to educate, you know, some of the kids who don't have. So that's what happened there. They started out with weaving baskets, you know, selling them. I think at the cost of about maybe contributing about 10 cents. So it takes a long time for people to pitch in 10 cents and build a clinic. So, and I think that was the story that Global Health had, and they went there and they've really done a great deal of work, you know.
Well, it's amazing how your involvement with Peacecraft led to this and your decision to get involved and then to help literally put the roof on what was already started. So that was the dispensary. And tell us a little bit about the medical system in Kenya out in the rural parts. What is a dispensary?
So the healthcare system is consists of a series of health centers, clinics, hospitals at various levels. At the sort of county level, there's a hospital in the past called a district hospital, is like the referral place. Then there are health centers, and then a dispensary is the sort of lowest level of clinic that's available. Dispensary is run by nurses. There are no doctors available. The nurses, although trained as nurses, work primarily as nurse practitioners. They see all the patients who come in, many of them, in fact, probably designed more for immunizations, preventive care, and first aid. But in fact, they see the whole gamut of young children. They do deliveries right there in the clinic as well. So part of their challenge is that they can be overwhelmed with a large number of people who need to be seen, who don't have other options for care. That's where we come in. The training that they need, the training that they've had has been very good in some senses for some problems, but for others they have not been trained well for. So a large part of our role is to do some training, work together with them to improve capacity of their ability to take care of many problems they don't feel comfortable with. There are now, started with just one nurse, often in a dispensary, but it's become so busy they've added a second nurse, then a third. Now there are four Kenyan providers there seeing patients.
Now, I looked at in the annual report, and there were some statistics for how many patients were seen in, I believe, the year 2013, or maybe it was 2012 and 11,506 patients, visits to the clinic,
yes,
and 50 deliveries. Are either of those statistics on the high end or the low end of what one might expect? And first, let's say, what's the population served? How many people?
It's between 35,000 to 50,000. It's a little difficult to pin down because the population of the region around that is 35 to 40,000. People travel, though, from further away to come there because of the consistent availability of medicines, which are often missing in other facilities. Some people will walk past, and most people walk there, will walk past another clinic or health center for hours to get to the Kissimmee dispensary because of the reputation and the availability of medicines. So the population serve is probably somewhat larger than that, but in the range of 35 to 50,000, there's also community projects going on. So it goes beyond the actual clinic itself. There are projects that involve improving child nutrition, child immunizations, maternal health care, going out to villages that are most isolated with a team on a weekend to do those things, to bring care, especially preventive care, to families.
Well, and, you know, so many contributing factors, including the arid conditions there and the drought, but it's sort of a staggering percentage of children who are malnourished. What is that percentage?
It depends on the measurement of it, but if you look at growth stunting, which is sort of chronic malnutrition, undernutrition over time, it's about a third of all the children. It's in the range of about 35% of children who have evidence of significant malnutrition. That doesn't include what's often called micronutrient malnutrition, where it's not visible, but deficiencies of important nutrients, whether it be iron or zinc or iodine and so forth. So part of what we're doing, one of the many projects, because malnutrition is a contributing cause to at least 50% or more of childhood deaths, that's an important priority both in terms of treating it, identifying the children, treating it through a therapeutic feeding program, very successful program that we've started, as well as the prevention of it. We have some agricultural programs in place to try to look at improving agriculture. We've trained community health workers to teach nutrition, hygiene for prevention of malnutrition. And the community health workers in the villages then provide this important access to families that they wouldn't otherwise receive.
And Dr. Ruth O'Keefe, let's talk about some of those products, those nutritional products, because I was struck by the names of them. I mean, that's the first thing one sees. So tell us a little bit about those products and how successful they are in treating this issue.
Plumpy Nut. You would never be able to market a product like Plumpy Nut to American children. But it saves lives. We have known the cure for malnutrition forever. It's food. And this product, Plumpy Nut, is packaged in such a way, it's simply peanut butter and some carbohydrates and some fats, but it's packaged in a durable way. So it can be kept and stored and transported, and it even tastes good, so the children won't complain. It can change their lives. If your brain is developing from the ages of birth until 2 in a state of chronic hunger, you just won't be all that you can be.
Now, the name of the product might turn some people off here in the United States, but is there a sense that people in the United States here who are hungry could also benefit from this product?
Well, in the sense that most poor families here in the United States have refrigeration, it's unnecessary.
Okay.
It's necessary for a very rural, no electricity, no water environment.
But is it better nutritionally than a lot of things that people might be able to get at a low price here in the United States?
I'm not even sure that's available here in the United States.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and bring in a caller. It's Ed from Albuquerque. He has been on hold for a while. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for joining our conversation.
Okay. The one thing that I wanted to comment on is global health has gone one step further, and they have a birthing center, and I haven't heard much about that this
we
morning.
We were going to get to that special event that happened. Do you want to say anything about it? Are you involved with the organization before we dig into that subject, Ed?
Yeah, sure. I'm the spouse of Ruth O'Keefe, and I've traveled with them once over to Kissimmee. And it's the work is difficult at best. It's just, I mean, they have to work all the time to stay alive. And these guys are doing a wonderful job.
And so, Ed, is it survival mode? Is that what you saw, an entirely different way of life than we experience here?
It's definitely an entirely different way of life because of water more than anything else. But having no water, no electricity, and still surviving isn't what we think about an easy way to survive from here in the United States.
Mm. Well, thank you for going over there yourself and doing work. And let's go ahead and talk about the special event that did take place on March 14th this year. Were any of you there for that event? You were, Dr.
Yes,
Tomati.
I was, sir.
So tell us, Ed alluded to it, and what happened on March 14th this year?
It was a dream come true for the community. From the very beginning, they pointed out how important it was to improve care for pregnant women and have safe childbirth available. In fact, my very first trip there was a little skit they put on. This whole group of women had two women holding another woman walking a long distance down a path with who was pregnant, you know, not real pregnant, but with a ball or something under, fell down several times. They'd pick her up. She'd fall down again and then finally delivered in the dirt and the baby dies. This was to point out to us how difficult circumstances was for pregnant women and the loss of so many newborn babies there, the maternal deaths that happened from lack of access to safe childbirth. So that was a priority for the community from the beginning. So once that clinic was finished, we were still starting to raise funds to try to get this maternity center built. So, as I said, a dream come true for the community. There were celebrations, large numbers of people from the community there. The equivalent of the lieutenant governor, you know, for the county was there to commemorate the facility. And shortly afterwards, someone came in and delivered twins at the site. And did very well along with other deliveries that happened there. So it's popular for the community as well. The nurses are very thrilled with having a facility where they could observe women for 24 hours and their babies instead of having them walk back home for many hours immediately after birth. So yes, wonderful addition to the facility.
So there was some joy in the community when that opened. And is there an expectation that the number of births that happen at the clinic or the maternity center will now increase when people learn about the facility?
That's right. That's the expectation, is that we'll have quite a lot more women coming there to deliver. The traditional birth attendants who often attend births at home often accompany the women, and they're invited to stay to help there as well. And that, again, popular enough, and we expect a large increase in those facility deliveries as well as improved care for the women and their children.
And there are some great photographs on the website of the woman who gave birth and then her attendants and I think a relative holding the twins.
It yes.
just it's a good picture, and everybody looks happy and healthy. Now, Dr. O'Keefe, there are also community health workers who now go out and visit people who have just given birth, babies and the mothers. And is that accurate? Is there a program to monitor that as well?
That's a brilliant project that Angelo started there. You know, a huge percentage of infant death happens within that first week of life, and it just seems so unnecessary. So we train these very talented but non-medical community health workers to look at four things. They'll count respirations, they'll take a temperature, they'll observe feeding, and they will observe movement. And if any of those four things are off on day one, day three, or day seven of life, then they transport that infant for care, for evaluation and care. And it is incredible through our preliminary studies how much we have decreased infant mortality that program.
And I think the number I saw was in general in rural Kenya, it's 3% is the infant mortality rate. And now where you serve, it's down to 0.4%.
Well, let me maybe comment
expand,
about correct
yes.
the number a little,
okay.
a little bit in terms of the so in Kenya, as many African countries, the under 5 mortality, as UNICEF calls it, under 5 years of age, is about 80 per thousand. So of every 1,000 children born, about 80 of them will die of usually preventable causes. For infants that's under 1 year of age, it's about 60. Then we look at what's called the neonatal period, the very first month of life. And of the under 5 deaths, children under 5 who die, 40% of those deaths are in that first month of life. And then of those, 80% are in the first week of life, mm-hmm. you see. So, again, very high-risk period, and that 30 is the neonatal, the first month of life in Kenya. 30 per thousand die, and of the first 1,400 home visits that the community health workers are involved with, there were 7 per thousand deaths. So with the expected, as I said, of 30 per thousand in most of Kenya in the data. So very, very promising so far in terms of the results that we've seen for this project.
We're talking today about Albuquerque-based Global Health Partnerships work in Kenya and participation in efforts there by many New Mexicans. I'm joined by Dr. Angelo Tomedi. He's the founder of Global Health Partnerships, by Dr. Ruth O'Keefe. She is vice president of the board of Global Health Partnerships, and Mbarak Hussein, a native Kenyan and world-class runner who is on the GHP board, who helps organize this Sunday's safari run. If you would like to participate in our program, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may also call our local number 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments for our guests. Tell us, do you think many of the things that are being learned by this organization in Kenya can be applied here in New Mexico or other places in the United States? We'll be back with you in a moment.
Getting a refund this year, flirting with the idea of getting a new or perhaps a newer vehicle, maybe your old one isn't much of a trade-in. There must be an easy way to get rid of that unwanted vehicle that just doesn't serve you anymore. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just listen to me. Slip out your phone, Joan, and call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's right, Dwight, 888-586-6227. Get yourself free, Lee. 888-KUNM-CAR. Char.
What's a little eccentric, a bit adventurous, philosophical, friendly? Chatter Sunday, a community of music lovers coming together to share an experience and be enriched for the week. Great music, poetry, espresso, community, every Sunday morning at 10:30 at the Cosmos. For details and directions, visit chatterabq.org. Chatter, music worth talking about. A message from the tax-exempt Chatter ABQ.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking today about Albuquerque-based Global Health Partnerships work in Kenya and participation in efforts there by many New Mexicans. And maybe some people who are listening this morning were at an event last night. There was a premiere of a movie. Who was there last night? Ruth, you were there. Were you there, Mbarak?
Yes, I was there.
Well, tell us a little bit, Mbarak, about the movie and what that experience is, please.
The movie was a great movie. I wish it can get out there and everybody see the work that Global Health does. You know, it details the beginning of the projects in Kenya and when the women, the organization, the corporation in Kenya started, and when Global Health came in and all the results that we hear, you know, it's all detailed in the movie.
And what's the name of the movie?
Mabetti, Road to
Kisesini.
Kisesini. Yeah. And is it a local filmmaker who was responsible for that project?
Ann Bromberg, who is a local filmmaker and teacher in Albuquerque Public Schools was responsible for that.
Did she travel there in order to film?
She traveled there with Angelo and a few students on that trip.
And so the movie was shown at an event last night. And what was that event, Ruth?
Oh, that was a red carpet event at the Chemo Theater featuring many local film makers and their works.
And if people didn't get a chance to see that movie, Embark, last night, when will they get to see it again? Where is it available? Any sense of that?
There's a clip on our website, and we will be sure to post the next premiere, the next showing of that movie.
And perhaps it'll be entered into festivals and
exactly
and things like that, and people will get a chance to go ahead and see it. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Laura from Albuquerque. Good morning, Laura. Hello, Laura. Are you with us? No, Laura is not with us. Let's go ahead and take Peggy from Albuquerque. Hi, Peggy. Good morning. Thank you so much for joining our conversation.
Yes, I was wondering if there was scholarship funds available or any sort of help so that professionals, nurses, and doctors from this area could travel with DHP to Africa.
Let's go ahead and get that question answered. Hang with us on the line, Peggy, in case we have a follow-up. Anyone, Dr. Tomedi?
I'm not aware of any scholarships. There is some assistance, financial assistance, for the medical students who can travel there. And UNM has some funding for some global health funding to help support students to participate.
Well, Peggy, so the short answer is no, unless you're a medical student. Tell us, you're listening today. Are you feeling like you want to get involved?
Well, yes, I was just wondering, because it's such a far away and it's so expensive to get there. And so if people want to volunteer there, do they have to pay their own expenses? Or that's what I was wondering.
The answer to that is yes. We all pay our own expenses. Global Health Partnerships does not pay people's way there, including all of us. All of us who go pay all of our own expenses so that donations go directly into the projects themselves.
Is there any thought, or maybe even just today a thought, of finding a way to help other professionals who would like to go raise the money to get there?
Be something we, I guess, can try to address further with the UNM.
Okay, thanks so much for your call today, Peggy. And you know, it's pretty remarkable when I looked at the annual report. It looks like 98% of the money you raise goes directly into programs. That's pretty astounding amount for any organization.
Yes, that's our commitment is that when people donate, they would like to see results in the country, and we have continued to stick by that commitment. That's if people donate, that it will go directly for these projects, for for medicine, for maternity and child health care services, and so forth. An ambulance service for rapid transport, the various things. We fill in gaps. You know, the government does provide some of the support for this facility. But we fill in gaps with very much needed life-saving medicines, emergency transport, a lot of training and so forth. And all that goes directly into those projects.
Okay. Now, in the mission statement for Global Health Partnerships, it says that the partnerships work and partner with local community organizations and healthcare providers in, quote, developing countries. So the work is in Kenya right now. Is there any plan to expand the work to other countries, or is that just an open door for when that opportunity might arise?
Yes, we want to keep that door open, of course. We think this model is one that can be applied to other areas. I'm currently working with another nonprofit organization in Burkina Faso in West Africa that has asked me to try to help develop a similar project there. Global Health Partnership itself, I'm currently their advisor, is not involved because we still have inadequate funds to do all the things we feel is important in Kenya. We don't want to take resources away from what needs to be done there. But if we can grow further, I think all of us have an interest in doing similar type of collaborative partnership types of work in other regions.
Is it a model, Dr. O'Keefe, that people have reached out and said, we love what you're doing and how you've done it? Has anybody approached you about trying to replicate it elsewhere?
Oh, yes, and that will be the Burkina Faso. It is the perfect partnership. The Kenyan Health Ministry pays the three nurses and the fourth healthcare worker for full-time work. We pay them overtime so that we have 24/7 obstetrical coverage. The Kenyan Health Ministry provides many medications for our pharmacy, but we do the fill-in. And emergency medical transport has truly saved lives. That's a huge proportion of our budget to keep a vehicle working and gassed up for transport.
That's a working ambulance?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we have Glenn back on the line who's still listening in Hemet Springs, and I believe he has an idea for Peggy about perhaps raising funds to get over to the village. Hi, Glenn. Thank you. Welcome back.
My son raised several thousand dollars for a Mexican theater group to come to the U.S. We have a New Mexican woman, Asliani, right now with Kickstarter also that my son used, raising money for a musical album, $4,000. I think if Peggy is serious about this, there's a way to go. So just Google Kickstarter and get going.
All right, Glenn, thanks so much. And Dr. Tomati, would you welcome participation by people outside of the medical school, by medical professionals here in town who are listening and feeling passionate about participating?
Oh, yes. Of course we will. We do. And we have had other healthcare professionals and non-professionals accompany us on trips for specific roles that they could play there. Some of them have spent a month or even several months there who were not medical students. We have had, like I said, some difficulty with the fundraising issues, however, and they've had to raise those funds themselves to do that. But we would very much welcome their participation, and there'd be all kinds of different roles they could play to help in this partnership with Kenya.
Well, thanks so much to Glenn for that suggestion for Peggy. And, Bark, let's talk about Kenya a little bit, because I know you're an American citizen now. You probably have dual citizenship. I'm sure you keep in touch with what's going on in Kenya. And so, you know, we hear dire warnings about climate change here in the United States. Is there that same sense that things might get worse in Kenya in terms of the arid nature or the drought?
Yes, there is, and you know, with the global warming, and I can, you know, I can say in the last few years there's been a lot of droughts and floods. I don't know if I can attribute that to the global warming, but you know, the last few years we've really had some very bad droughts, and it's something that's of a big concern.
Is there a sense that there could be some kind of when I say development, I don't even mean industrial, but some kind of change in the rural parts of Kenya that would allow people to have the funds and services they need? Is there some program or programs afoot there?
Yes, recently Kenya we got a new constitution. And the government system really changed. We developed what they call the county government that Mr. Angelo was talking about earlier on. So what they are doing is they're trying to regionalize. You know, they take the money from the central government to the county level. So this brings more access to, you know, I would say it's kind of an equitable distribution of funds. You know, the government has always been under the ministry. So all the counties were being run from the national government, you know, the central government. And so much of the money didn't trickle down to the villages. Like Isisini is a very remote village. There's no roads, there's no running water, no electricity. So these are the places where in the last years it's really suffered a lot. And that's where you see people taking the responsibility by themselves. They are trying to weave baskets. Now with the decentralization of the government, the county government has really stepped in, and I think this is a great and a big step towards the eradication of some of this problem. And it's much easier now, I think, Dr. Angelo. The last time they went there, they managed to work with the county government, which I, in my opinion, is very... It's much easier to work with than going to the government. You know?
More accessible and local and understand the needs better. Dr. Tomedi, what's your experience with that, that decentralization? And is that going to be helpful to global health partnerships?
Yes, so far it's looking very, very positive. Again, our project is a collaboration. It's a partnership with the Ministry of Health, with the Kenyan people to improve things. And I meet with them on every visit I go to. The current administration and staff at the county level have been very, very cooperative and helpful, both in the maternity center construction, with the design of it, and with other projects as well. So I see this as being a very important step towards improving relationships and improving the effectiveness of projects.
Ruth O'Keefe, do you plan to return to the village?
I certainly hope.
And what is it, what particular projects grab you? Anything on the horizon or anything that's currently being done?
Well, we have been investigating a menstruation project. Interestingly enough, young girls have no knowledge, no discussion, no materials, no sanitary material, and they simply don't go to school during their periods. And it puts them at a great disadvantage. Technically, they have every advantage boys have to go to school and study. But this one aspect of growth and development that separates girls from boys keeps them out of school for a week every month. So that's our next big project we'd like to work on.
Great. And Embark, let's revisit about the safari run and the Race with Kenyans for Global Health that's coming up this Sunday, May 18th. Can people still register?
Yes, absolutely. The registration is still open. We got about three more days, and we're going to take registration until the rest day, which, you know, will close about an hour before the run, which starts at 8. So if you get there by 7, you can still register.
Okay, and we've got the information up on our webpage. We have the registration page, and the website address generally is ghp-usa.org. Can people donate generally to the organization, Dr. Tomedi?
Oh, they certainly can, and very, very welcome and very effectively used as well. They can donate by simply sending a check to Global Health Partnerships. The address is on the website. They buy credit card directly from the website. And like I said, very welcome to do so. And that's where most of our income, nearly all of our income comes from, is individual people who are supporting us.
Well, and I found a very concrete number on the website about what people could contribute to feed a child for a month, one child for a month. What is that? What's that monetary amount?
Oh, it's in the range of $30. So it's not very much by our standards, I think. It goes a long way over there.
So every $30 that someone contributes potentially feeds one child over in the village or in that surrounding area for a month. Well, thanks to our guest, Global Health Partnerships Board Vice President Dr. Ruth O'Keefe, native Kenyan, GHP board member and world-class runner, Mbarak Hussein, get out and run with him this Sunday, and Dr. Angelo Tomedi, GHP founder, for making themselves available to our listeners. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. Thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White. Michael Hess has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Collins Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico. We'll